Welcome to the Innovation Race Podcast, where we meet fascinating inventors, innovators, politicians, and leaders who share the view that what's best for our country is to protect patents and keep innovation in America. Now, here's your host, Jenny Beth Martin.
I'm excited about this episode. If you've been listening to our entire Innovation Race podcast, you've heard many guests mention Josh Malone, the balloon guy. I met and got to know Josh several years ago when we told his story in our film Invalidated, which is a prequel to Innovation Race. In this episode, Josh elaborates on his story, which will make you mad, but in the end, you'll walk away with a glimmer of hope. Also, Innovation Race is now available to watch on salemnow.com, making it easier than ever for you to share this important film with your friends and family. And now, here's my interview with the inventor of Bunch of Balloons, Josh Malone. Josh, thanks so much for joining us.
Glad to be here.
So, I know your story, and a lot of the people who we've interviewed for the podcast know your story, but the audience may not know. Who is Josh Malone and why do people keep talking about him and what do balloons have to do with patents? So why don't you tell us a little bit about how you got where you are here today?
Here in the swamp in Washington, D.C.,
yes.
Trying to fight big tech and save our patent system. Yeah.
So you invented a bunch of balloons. What is that and how did that happen?
So a bunch of balloons is the invention, the product that got me involved in public policy. That was not my goal at all. Not in my desire at all, but, I quit my job at big tech, 16 years ago, it was 2006. And I had these great ideas I wanted to pursue and I had this dream I could be an entrepreneur and start a business and build stuff. And, told my wife that, you know, I was really thinking about going after these ideas I had. And she said, well, that sounds good. I think that would suit you well. And now she didn't expect me to come home the next day and say, well, I turned in my 2 weeks notice, and so we're quitting.
Oh my goodness.
It was just, I'm very driven. And so I couldn't pursue this thoroughly and see if I could make it work. And so we had a nest egg and we talked it out and we actually came to agreement that you got one shot at this. We were in our early 30s and we had growing family and we're like, okay, this is the American dream. Let's try it. And you know, if it doesn't work, then you got to go back and pick yourself up and get a paycheck again. And so 7 years later, I was still tinkering in the garage, coming up with stuff. I'd had one product that I was able to get to market and generate some revenue and then lost it all on the next one. And
oh no.
Was just scrambling and bootstrapping, doing consulting to pay the bills. And just the reality was we weren't getting ahead. And it was fun. It was a good ride. And I was updating my resume, looking for job openings. And I couldn't find anything for a free-spirited entrepreneur who wants to set his own hours, his own budget. And like, it was these dreadful job positions for like mid-level engineers. And it was depressing. Like, this is my future. And so, it was the middle of winter and, I pulled back off the back burner, this idea of filling and sealing water balloons. And I've got one more shot at this. I've got like 3 weeks before we run completely out of money. And, I solved a problem and I came up with this product called Bunch of Balloons.
And describe to people who have not seen the product, and if they haven't, they're missing the number one toy, at least the number one summertime toy. Mm-hmm. Explain what is Bunch of Balloons.
Yeah. So this was in early 2014.
Okay.
Ages ago now. but I'll describe how I came up with it. So I wanted to fill these water balloons and make it easier and faster. And so
to have like a water balloon war.
Just water balloons.
Yeah. Water balloons. Okay.
Yeah. And so, I had this idea that I could, instead of tying the balloon, this is after I tried all sorts of other different crazy ideas for sealing the balloon. I said, well, what if I put a little rubber band, a little elastic ring around the neck of the balloon, it could squeeze it shut. And so I found a size -003 O-ring made out of butyl rubber or nitrile rubber. And I got it on the neck of the balloon. And then I thought maybe this will seal the balloon. And so I had to get the water into it. And so now I've got a ring around a balloon. And so I found a small tube, like a soda, like a coffee straw. And I inserted it in the neck of the balloon, spread open the O-ring.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other end of the tube, I had to connect to a water source. And so I started scrummaging around, and I got the cap that goes on the end of a garden hose, and I drilled a hole in it. And I was about to proceed to glue that tube into that hole. And I looked and I thought, well, there's room for more tubes here. And so I just went for it. I'm swinging for the fences here. I went and filled the end of that cap with holes. So I had 37 holes in the end of this cap. I glued a tube into each one. The other end of that was a small balloon with an O-ring around it. I took that out back and connected it to the garden hose, and I turned on the water, and all these balloons started filling up. And then when they were full, I shook it and they fell off and they sealed themselves.
Wow.
And so that's so that was my first prototype. I quickly began to assemble, you know, kind of refine it, and very quickly we were filling and sealing 100 water balloons in 1 minute.
Which normally would have taken like 2 hours almost to do if you were doing it all by hand.
Yeah. We actually, my son, a little while later set the world record, the Guinness world record for tying water balloons. And he did, at the time the record was 6 balloons in 1 minute.
Wow.
So he achieved 9 in the competition. We had to do a video evidence of our Guinness world record. So he was competing with the old school technology, which Guinness required, and they wouldn't accept my technology. So his little sister was filling with my balloons. He was doing them one at a time, tying them with a knot. He did 9
wow.
in a minute, got the world record, but we submitted the evidence, and his sister was doing, she did 140 in the same time, but he still has the record.
Okay, because it was hand, what you can do on your own.
Yeah.
And then what happened with your, so you created this product, this you had this idea, you could seal 100 water balloons. Clearly parents across the country who want their children to have water balloons would find this useful, because 2 hours to fill, which is probably what it would have taken me to fill 100 water balloons, is not my idea of fun at all. So what'd you do next?
Yeah, I thought, and I had this idea, and this is a theme I think in Innovation Race, a lot of the inventors who I work with now is like, maybe I can turn this into a product. Maybe I can scale it and start a business around it. And I started working on the production. I put it on Kickstarter, and it just blew up. Everyone loved it. They're like, and I thought early on I would be kind of solving this niche problem, like for, you know, hardcore water balloon enthusiasts. And we quickly found that, in fact, I'd say 8 or 9 out of 10 of our early customers, based on their feedback, we learned that they had never used water balloons before. So,
oh, wow.
So there are all these new people who just, it was too much of a hassle before,
right.
And now they're using water balloons for the first time, and they're complaining like they hurt. They're getting my floor wet. And I'm like, guys, it's a water balloon.
It's so water
clearly,
balloon.
I clearly had no experience with water balloons prior to seeing my technology.
So it opened up water balloons to a whole new market who maybe thought about it, but never had the courage to do so many at one time. You know, I think we all as kids probably did this at field day in, mm-hmm. in our schools, but probably not a lot of parents are sitting around filling them.
It never lived up to expectations. It
right.
was like all this effort. You're like, dang, you know, 10 balloons, they're gone.
And right. And they're gone. Yeah, they're gone so fast. Okay, mm-hmm. So you put it on Kickstarter, and then what happened to your invention after that? And when you went to Kickstarter, had you done anything to protect your invention?
Yeah, my invention was stolen.
And how did that happen?
Well,
and how did you protect it or think you were protecting it initially?
Yeah, I was very savvy. I was very educated. I worked at high tech. I had patent pending. So I knew the patent system. I knew that, that was key. Like I couldn't do this, the stuff I'm doing, the risk I'm putting my family to, the investment I'm doing, that you just can't do that if you don't have, reliable rights. So I did everything to protect my invention, filing for patents, doing the work with the U.S. Patent Office and internationally. And so what I found, you know, as a result of, while I was doing this, in fact, when I quit my job in 2006 was when the Supreme Court came up with a landmark decision that, you know, ripped away reliable patent rights from
perfect timing there for you, Josh.
2006, 2011 was the passage of the America Invents Act. That was when we were scraping, you know, the last of our savings to try to make this thing work. And so what I found was that the patents that we started with when I started this venture had been completely flipped upside down to where now in 2014, these large corporations who are incumbents in these different industries, whether it's Silicon Valley tech companies or consumer products companies like I was against, they don't care if you have a patent to them. It's just a meaningless piece of paper. And so these guys, this big gorilla in this industry just saw my invention. They said, well, we like it, and they stole it. And they don't care that I had patents.
It's almost like the patent was a license to steal for them. That's what they see it as.
Yeah.
When you go to apply for the patent, you have to tell everything about how you create it, right? I mean, it's not like a trade secret where you, or the secret formula for Coca-Cola, where nobody, very few people in the world know what it is, and it's very protected. You're showing it for the whole world to see.
Well, you're revealing it. That's part of the bargain, is you have to explain what you invented in a patent. So it's a public disclosure. That's your obligation as an inventor if you want a patent. But beyond that, it's the security, which is flatly a fraud. You know, the patent office they give you this certificate with a ribbon on it, signed by the director, appointed by the president, confirmed by the Senate, and said it secures to the inventor the exclusive rights to their invention. And no one believes it anymore. No one in Capitol Hill believes it. No one at the patent office believes it. No outside counsel or corporate counsel for any of these tech companies believes it. It's just a fraud. And more, as I've been involved in policy the last 5 years, there's just this huge marketing effort to sell this lie to inventors and entrepreneurs that if you participate in this system, the U.S. government will protect you with a patent. And it's the biggest fraud right now, affecting our economy and our ability to innovate. They don't protect you. If anyone wants to steal your technology from the patent or from your product that you, through your sweat and tears, you put into the market, and they go and send it to their guys in China. In fact, that's what this company did. They copied my Kickstarter. They bought my Kickstarter product. They sent it to their guys in China and said, give us 3 million of these in blue. And that's the same thing that Google and Microsoft and Apple and Samsung and these tech companies are doing. They're like, we don't have to invent. We can just rev our technology. And when these entrepreneurs come up with something good, we'll just incorporate it. But at the same time, this system is just, this propaganda is going out there that, like, hey, you're an inventor, you're an entrepreneur, you're coming to America, the land of opportunity and reward and property rights. And it's, they just steamrolled right through my patents. They said, there's nothing you can do with these.
Okay. There's a lot to unpack here. I want to go back to a couple things that you said, but we're going to do that in a moment. I want to talk about the bargain and why you think that this is a fraud that's affecting the economy. We're going to do that in just a minute, but let's go back and let's just talk through, just a little bit more about what happened. So you applied for your patent, you went on Kickstarter, and then this other company saw it, thought it was a great idea, and they created it in a different color, blue. And who was first to market with your product? Who
wound up? I was.
Okay. And then while you were, one of the things that I found fascinating about your story is we got to know each other a few years ago, is that when you went on Kickstarter, it was one of the fastest ones to explain to me what happened, because it went really fast. Like, you raised a lot of money very, very quickly. Didn't you set a record with Kickstarter at the time?
It was close. It was one of the most popular products that summer. We had the first day it went viral on the internet. It was on Gizmodo and BuzzFeed. And on day two, it was on national mainstream media. Good Morning America ran a story on it. And so then the Today Show flies me out to New York City. I have a water balloon fight on live TV in Times Square. Walmart's calling, Toys R Us is calling, Hasbro's calling. It was not just what you dream of this as an inventor and entrepreneur, but this was like 1,000 times bigger than I ever imagined.
Wow.
It just, everyone loves my invention. We've made it. And I remember you had that euphoria, like, we've arrived.
And in three weeks, you know, as you're putting it together, you're sitting there going, we're almost completely out of money. And then all of this amazing success began to happen.
Well, it looked like success, and people, there's a lot of misunderstanding about Kickstarter. You don't make money at Kickstarter. Like, if you, like, one out of 100 breaks even. And so we raised almost $1 million, put all that into producing the product that I had was now obligated to deliver to all these backers. So to that extent, it was successful. We had a product that people liked, and if I can go make this and scale it, then we should be able to reap some benefit. And so I partnered with a toy company, family-owned company called Zuru, to go into mass production. And so we took our Kickstarter seed funds, and they put in their capital, and we started building a factory and infrastructure to be able to make the millions and millions of balloons that that customers and retailers wanted.
And then all the while that you're doing this, there's a competitor who I don't think competitor is exactly the right thing to say.
Predator is the term we use.
Okay, thank you. So you've got this predator who is selling your product, and the thing about a patent is that you own the exclusive right to the brand new idea that no one had ever thought of before. I mean, if they had, we would have been having a lot more water balloon wars, and the thought of filling up 100 water balloons when my kids were little would not have been intimidating to me, but it was.
Yeah.
So they're infringing on your patent right, because they weren't paying you anything at all to basically use your idea for free.
No, they're bullies and they're predators and they don't care. So they just take what they like and they say, screw you. What are you going to do about it? And they knew I had a patent, and they said, we don't care.
And perhaps if you had not been on Kickstarter and they had just somehow found your idea, you may never have had the ability to defend your patent. But because it seems to me that because you were on Kickstarter and so many people saw it and you got that attention, you created it helped create this incredible market for people who wanted your product.
Yeah, but they didn't care whether they were buying a bunch of balloons or balloon bonanza. The consumers at this time, I didn't have my trademark and my brand is not the value. And when it comes to utility patents, that's not what people value for. They valued it for what it did.
Right.
And these guys had a cheap knockoff that at least it looked like it did the same thing until they got home and tried it and it didn't work. But but yeah, you're right. The key here was not the customer acceptance of my product, but my business partner. So I was able to sign, and you can't do this today. This was just 7 years ago. They didn't know about these guys didn't know about the American Invents Act. And so they signed with me an exclusive license agreement and agreed to pay me for my technology. And they had enough capital and they had enough tenacity to make this their flagship product and go to the mat and fight for it. And so I had a partner who was willing and able to pick a fight with this bully, absolute bully. And that wasn't enough. We'd have lost, I don't know how much time we have to go into the story, but it wasn't just that they were willing to fight them. It's that we ended up developing the number one selling outdoor toy.
Right.
While these guys were stealing it. So we built this factory. We were able to make a better product. We were able to get it into we were Walmart. We're in the toy department and they're in the checkout lane. And so we were able to compete with these guys, and no one else can. Everyone else who's gone up against these guys, I remember seeing the pocket hose, the expanding garden hose. Well, the Inventors was on the shelf, $19.99, high quality, well-made product. Well, they did $1 billion in sales on the pocket hose. It was the $9.99 version, put him out of business. And so the most anyone's lasted with these guys. And the same thing happens in these other industries where it's not $1 billion incumbents, it's $1 trillion incumbents. They just outlast you. So 12 to 16 months is the longest anyone, any small business can survive a patent litigation.
Because attorneys cost money. It takes a lot of time. And if you're trying to invest in the idea that you just created and create a business around it, that takes a lot of time and capital and money. And then all of your money winds up going to attorneys first. So you just kind of, you run out of money. Isn't that a lot of what's going on? People just, They can't afford that kind of litigation.
You cannot be hyperbolic when you describe, it's impossible. You cannot exaggerate how oppressive and overwhelming the litigation process has become in the United States. We had to raise and spend $75,000 per week, $300,000 per month, and these litigations take 15 years to resolve. And if you're Google or Microsoft or Apple, you're like, well, that's $50 million a year. And it's in their budget. We spent altogether $20 million fighting over water balloon technology. And it's just, no, I'm telling you, no, I'm the only one. Since the American Invents Act, I'm the only inventor who started a company and put a product in the market and survived the America Invents Act.
$20 million. And at $300,000 a month, that's what, $3.6 million a year? Mm-hmm. That is,
No one can do it.
No one can. I mean, you couldn't that is so much money. It's more money than most people can imagine having it at one time.
And but I did it. I sat there with my wife and said, I'm going to quit my job and try to create technology that's backed by a patent. And we're going to put our kids through college on that. It's foolish. And I didn't know, but I have this conversation with entrepreneurs today. I'm like, you know, it's good that you have the spirit of adventure and you're a dream, you know, you're willing to pursue your dreams. But I like to say, you know, inventors, we're crazy, but we're not stupid. And given what's transpired here in our country and in our justice system and our patent system, you can't. It's just, there's absolutely no basis, no rational basis whatsoever to pursue developing new technology and bringing it to market. You're going to lose.
Okay.
No matter how, if you win, you're going to lose. They're going to steal it from you.
And that's why I've heard inventors, more experienced inventors recommend to new people who have come up with an idea, you would be better off just sticking your idea in a file cabinet and just don't even tell anyone what your idea is. So you're protecting your idea. No one is able to steal it, but you also aren't losing your entire life savings around it. And the thought of locking up ideas and not letting them out for people to innovate on top of, that scares me. It may not scare most people, but it scares me. I'm sitting here using new technology. And I used to program computers. I love looking at technology and all the cool new things that exist. And if those don't exist, our lives would be, they would not be as good as they are today in many ways.
Yeah. And it's not like we've got this cure for cancer and we're locking it up in the garage, but we've got some pretty darn good ideas that are worth pursuing. And you put 100,000, not unconventional, out of the box thinkers, and you give them an incentive and capital to go pursue these ideas. It worked for a couple of centuries. It worked. But yeah, it's not just our get. Now it's a race to the bottom. It's just like, we've got all this technology. We're just going to steal it and reverse engineer it. It's going to China. It's going to, it's what's missing isn't just locking up finished ideas. It's killing knowledge. It's killing that frontier. What else is out there that we need to figure out and tinker with and develop and build on? We don't have any building blocks anymore.
Right. And here's something it's not like inventors are putting the cure to cancer away and not revealing it. But we don't know that for certain. Not that I'm saying that there's a person who's put the cure to cancer away, but what I mean by that is oftentimes what makes inventions, it's not like you invented a balloon or you even invented a water balloon. You invented a way to put fill them much more quickly. Mm-hmm. And so it was an idea on top of ideas on top of ideas. And the cure to cancer may be an idea that's on top of other ideas that somebody is sitting there looking at. I don't have $3 million a year to, well, almost four, to protect this idea and actually do anything with it. And they just stick it away. And what they're putting away may be that building block that we need for who knows what else make the world a better place.
I mean, I work with inventors who are working on, diagnostics and therapies and monitoring systems. So you can give early warning of whatever these diseases are. We've got inventors working on, transmitting, focusing radiation so that you can, address a tumor in the body without damaging the surrounding tissue. This is crazy stuff, but it all started out as crazy stuff.
Right.
But we encouraged inventors and entrepreneurs and investors to see go see what you can do with it. And if you succeed, then we'll give you a patent on it and you can build a business on it and then we can all benefit from it.
Okay. And that's what you call the bargain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Explain that a little bit. And when you say we encouraged it, you mean our country, America,
yeah,
and the system that we have that is written into our constitution help do that.
Yeah. That was a crazy idea of our founders to put, patents and copyrights in the Constitution. And it says in Article 1, Section 8, to promote progress in the science and useful arts by securing to inventors the exclusive right to their discoveries. And along with that, 3 years later in 1790, they passed the first Patent Act, which granted patent rights to any he, she, or they who's invented a new technology. So unbelievable. Like, this was radical. This was one of those crazy American colonist radical ideas that ordinary people have something to contribute to innovation. And Europe just scoffed at us. They're like, no, technology and innovation comes from, PhDs and ivory towers surrounded by vast resources. And so farmers, school teachers, bicycle repairmen, they got nothing to offer.
And if they did, the government, it belonged to the king.
Yeah.
It belonged to the crown. It wasn't your own idea.
Yeah. And so, but they weren't, but it was still very, natural rights based. It was very property rights based. It wasn't, we're going to compel you guys to go make stuff. We're going to put you in a factory and you're going to come up with great inventions. It was the bargain is, okay, we want the knowledge. We want these ideas to be published and propagated and everyone to benefit from them so we can build on them, like we've been talking about. How do we get people to, develop, invest, and then share their ideas? Well, instead of keeping it locked away a secret. Well, then they wrote in the Constitution securing the exclusive rights. So the whole deal, and this is what I was taught, this is what we still teach at school, it's just not true anymore. if I come up with something new and I put in a patent, that is my end of the bargain. I've written down what I came up with, how to make it, what's novel and unique about it. And rather than keep that locked up, I'm disclosing that to the world through the U.S. Patent Office. And in return for that, the bargain is I get a temporary exclusive right to it. I get a 20 years of property rights. I own it. Like, this whole idea of owning your invention.
Right.
Now, you own it when it's a secret and you don't tell anyone.
Right.
But we said that's not good enough. No one benefits if you keep it a secret. We want you to share your secret. You can still own it for a limited time. And that's the bargain. So don't keep it a secret. Share it. And in exchange, we'll give you a property right. You can build it yourself. You can license it. You could lock it up, but why would you want to do that? Like,
right.
Like, no one's locking up their inventions if they can profit from them.
Right. Yeah. And if you're able to profit from it, you can reinvest and in your own product, but also it kind of frees you up to keep thinking of new ideas as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So speaking of the elitist system. So what we have today in America, I just can't emphasize this enough, is we have that old system now because they threw out our patent laws. They've made it so hard to enforce your patents. The Supreme Court has changed the rules. Congress has changed the rules. The Patent Office now takes the side of these big tech companies. So today we have a system again where only the elites can invent. So, I fought off the bad guys. I have a revenue stream and royalty now. I can go back and invent because I'm a millionaire. Elon Musk, he and I can go, try to solve the problems of the world. But we've cut out 99% of the ordinary people who can contribute to the next round of innovation. They can't participate anymore.
Not you and Elon, but But the America system and our society, the America Invents Act, some of the decisions from the Supreme Court.
Today, patents are just for the elite, those who have K Street lobbyists and corporate make donations to the campaigns. Even now, there's all sorts of hubbub at the patent office because we've got a new director appointed by President Biden. And, you know, the corporations have all been trying to get their person put in charge of that office because that person now writes the rules. And so there's all this debate and like if, and of course, small businesses and entrepreneurs aren't represented in that at all. So it, so my point is in order to benefit from the patent system now, you have to be one of these large corporations that is dealing in politics and DC, and then you can have patent rights and stop competitors from participating and competing with you, the little guy like me. But if you're just an ordinary person, you follow the rules, you disclose your invention, patent office gives you a patent, they're going to turn around and yank it away if you try to use it. At the PTAB, we've talked about the PTAB before in the other documentary. The Supreme Court's gonna upset things. It's just they've introduced so much chaos and uncertainty, and only the big guys can participate in the U.S. patent system today.
And right now, that might be okay because there's technology that has been patented that they're inventing on top of. But in the long run, if this continues for several decades, we're going to see a drop in we'll see a drop in innovation in our country. And a drop that will wind up affecting the entire world. And I don't mean that America is so important that we affect the entire world, but our system that has protected patents has helped inventors around the entire world be able to invent over the last couple of centuries.
Yeah. So you know what, the U.S. patent system is not limited to U.S. citizens. We have so many foreign applicants and immigrants who've benefited from the U.S. patent system because it was, you didn't have to be rich. You didn't have to know a politician. Anyone could participate.
And in America, traditionally, we have had a unique respect for property rights, individual property rights. Right now, as we go down this road, in what our documentary shows is that in China right now, they are they've replicated a lot of what was good in our patent system, and they've incorporated it into their patent system. So we see more people inventing in China right now. What concerns me about that is that while America traditionally respects individual property rights, China does not have the same kind of respect for property rights or even individual rights at all, basic human rights. So even if an inventor is going to China and right now they feel like they are safe going there to invent, which some many are, I don't think in the long run we can trust the CCP to actually protect individual property rights.
Yeah, that's the thing is in the short run, I mean, I'm getting educated. We're educating other entrepreneurs and inventors and. You're going to find a way to succeed,
right.
whether there's a reliable patent system or not. You're going to find a way. And so in the short run, yeah, it includes international diversification. It includes using trade secrets like we talked about before. But at the end of the day, when you say, where are we going to be in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years? China's already got our stuff. They've got incredible universities and intelligent people and like that the technology we have today is out there. The horse is out of the barn. You're not going to get it back. But what we have, I still think we have is this idea. Am I going to go and bet my children, my grandchildren's future on, on a China patent system or today a US patent system, but that spirit, that idea that, can we harness our ingenuity and come up with things no one else has ever thought of before? And is there an economic incentive for that? And that I still think we have. I just think that all these challenges to our economy and international competitiveness and increasingly, international conflict. Like, we still have that spirit. It's vanishing. Like, I'm telling my kids don't have the same vision I did when I thought I could quit my job and put their future at risk to go do this. It's vanishing, but we still have our history. We still have, I think, the work that you're doing here to spread the word that, like, hey, this can work. But it's going to take a big shift in how we think about patents, how we think about our justice system. Because right now it's just lowest common denominator, and our system is provides no more incentive than China's does in the short term.
Okay, now I think that your children, like my children, they haven't had a normal experience that probably the average Americans have. Yours have, and by that what I mean is they understand what happens when you invent and what can happen, and they understand the patent system much better than. Mm-hmm. than most adults in the country do. Mm-hmm. And my children have seen me be very cynical about our country from time to time, and I'm sure that affects them as well. But we still have inventors who are not familiar with the America Invents Act, and they have these great ideas, and they are taking these risks. One of the ones that we interviewed, she was not in the documentary, but we've interviewed for the podcast, is Molly Metz, who came up with an invention on speed jump ropes. Mm-hmm. And her patent was recently invalidated. It's so awful for me, and you hear so many more of these than I do, to know that we still have people who are willing to take this risk and share their ideas with the world. And they're doing so I don't want to say naively, they're doing so coming from a sense of innocence. And very quickly they learn about what you called the fraud affecting the economy.
Yeah. Yeah. It's definitely a crisis point. And, when I quit my job, and then this last venture with Bunch of Balloons in 2014, I would say 99% of us thought that the system generally worked and the good guys usually win. And now that I think it's barely half. I think that the confidence in the U.S. government and the U.S. patent system has dropped from over 90% a few years ago to probably hovering around 50% today. Like, we just don't, it's clear that system's broken. And so it's definitely affecting the next generation and their ability to contribute.
So I want to get to what you think we need to do and what ideas you think we need to have that are solutions. And maybe it's obvious and we don't need to talk about this, but tell me what you think. You mentioned very early on that most inventors can't make it more than 14 or 16 months. They cannot withstand the legal battle. It seems to me that the legal battle not only is affecting their pocketbook, but even with you had a great business partner who was able to help fight your legal battles. It seems to me that the time and the energy, aside from the money, to deal with the legal system would sap your creative energy.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I can't do both. And I don't know many people who can. It's become this, system where it doesn't pay to do the work, follow the rules. You can't do both. And so, in fact, we see more and more, in fact, entirely, like, to succeed the patent system today, all the incentives are don't build anything, don't invest anything, but you can buy these patents now. You can buy them in the secondhand market. Some firms are creating their own, but they never build anything. They never take, financial risk or infrastructure capital. Just file lots of patents. If you get a few hundred patents, you can make some. You can go sue some people, make some money at it. And that's all the incentives now are driven towards this whole business model, and then they make that the target of all these reforms. Oh, you're a patent troll. And so they've created this incentive where the only business that makes sense with patents is to not invest in technology and serving, serving your customers or serving the market and society. It's just like, and so, yeah, that's all you can do if you have a passion. I mean, I remember talking to Molly about, she had this thriving business of gyms and she would do camps and seminars, and she had to shut that down in order to focus the energy required to go get the people who stole her invention, bring them to justice. And yeah, I mean, for me, it was 5 years out of my life chasing down the bad guys.
When you could have been reaping the benefit of the patent and coming up with new ideas that would benefit people in some way. I don't know what else is going on in your head, but I'm sure there are amazing things.
And inspiring others to say, hey, I want to try this too.
Right.
And then it multiplies.
Right.
Yeah. No, this is like, oh, you succeed as an inventor, you get one of those nightmare litigations.
One of the people in the documentary, Steve Perlman, we have talked a little bit about him, and I don't want to go a whole lot into his story, but one of the things that bothers me so much about what is going on with Steve Perlman, he has this, first, he came up with QuickTime. I mean, every video that we use on the internet right now and on our computers uses QuickTime. It is integral. I don't know that we would be able to stream video at all had he not been part of the team that came up with that. Mm-hmm. Now, in the documentary, we feature this cool new technology that he has that will make it easier to communicate wirelessly, not just using like 5G, but using other things in very, very crowded situations. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's really cool in a stadium. That's amazing. But I think that might be really useful if you're in a situation where you're just in a very crowded place, even if it is in a stadium, and it might be useful for public safety. And there are all sorts of unknown benefits to coming up with this technology. He is in the middle of lots of litigation trying to defend it. And he's coming up with ideas that truly change the way that we function and do business and live our lives. And I'm not saying that we can't live without a phone, but I am saying that the benefits that we've had from the different kind of technologies related to our phone they give us entertainment, but they also give us education and the ability to do business. Mm-hmm. It scares me when people like him have to put so much time and energy into defending themselves legally that they don't have time to come up with those ideas. Mm-hmm. It scares me when it's happening to you as well. Yeah. Your idea was a water balloon, but I guarantee you that if you can come up with that, you're coming up with other ideas as well.
Yeah. It's getting harder to imagine that world where I get to go back and tinker and work in all these spaces that we need solutions.
Yeah. And I would imagine it is becoming harder because you're not at home in Texas anymore. You're in Washington, D.C. now, and you were trying to get the system changed. Your life has changed a lot since 2014.
I have ideas. I'd love to, have the luxury enjoy the luxury that I have to go come up with new things. And maybe one more will succeed. It's going to be hard to beat Munchable Loons. But I'm not that extraordinary. At least, I mean, okay. Whatever my capabilities are, there's hundreds of thousands of others out there who have as good or better abilities to innovate than I do. And it would be so much more valuable to empower them to go to work and solve these problems. And that's where, and I have this experience and this visibility into the system that no one else has.
Right.
No one else has been through what I've been through under the America Invents Act and can explain to legislators and administrators of the patent office and courts and judges how this works and what we've lost and how to fix it. So I just have a unique experience and a platform to maybe affect change. So that's where I'm putting my energies.
And that's what brought you to Washington, D.C., to move your family to Washington, D.C.
Yeah. Well, I had to get involved in public policy because I was losing. the system was broken. I was going to go down with it. And so I came to Congress and came to the patent office, and we had a protest in 2017 where we burned our patents and got the attention of the White House. And it wasn't my, I didn't know what to do. I was desperate, for my own business, my own family. And anyway, as a result of that, actually it affected the outcome of my case where I was able to beat this $1 billion bully. But I had to get involved in public policy because the system was broken. And, our situation was not resolved. Sat down and talked to the family. I said, look, I'm traveling all over. I keep going to Washington, D.C., and it's probably useless. Like, we're fighting these trillion-dollar tech companies. We're doomed, right? This isn't going to work. But I think I'm supposed to keep fighting anyway. Do you guys want to, should I just wrap it up and come home, and or should we all move to D.C. and try to carry on this fight? And they were all game for it. So we moved the whole family out here so that I could be home at night and still work with folks on Capitol Hill and at the patent office and try to turn this around. That was about 3 years ago.
And what do you think the solutions are? What solutions are you advocating for?
Well, the laws and the procedures have to correspond to the Constitution that says securing to inventors the exclusive right to their discoveries. And that's not what we have today. Believe it or not, there's no securing that comes with a U.S. patent, none. The Supreme Court took care of that in 2006. Congress has set up a lot of procedures as well. And the exclusive right. So this idea that, are you kidding me? I mean, you can decide who gets to use it and how they use it and how much they pay for it. We don't have that. And so, that was done away with the American Invents Act, with the Supreme Court eBay decision, the Supreme Court, a variety of other decisions. So, the Supreme Court, I don't think they can fix it anymore. They just, they don't completely undo precedent, except for this recent case.
They kind of have a tendency right now to be willing to do that.
So it's just not how it's normally done. So I think that the courts are not going to help us here. The patent office can do a lot. And under the modern administrative state, Congress has been very derelict, and they've given the executive branch a lot of their responsibilities to construct laws through the regulatory system. Well, the patent office could fix the regulations to go a long way towards solving this. So we're working in that area. So the director of the patent office can pass formal regulations that go in the Federal Register that would eliminate most of the abuse that's going on, but they haven't had it's too political. They don't have the willpower to do it yet. So we're pushing, applying, between reason and political pressure, trying to convince the head of the patent office to structure their system to make it fair for small inventors and small businesses. So the one thing is through the regulations, but even that's short term. It's this 4-year cycle of political influence to try to get them to do the right thing.
Right.
So the real solution, the long-term solution that we need would lie in the hands of Congress to pass legislation to repeal the American Invents Act, to overturn the eBay decision that says, inventors don't get to decide how they're, it's not really a property right under the eBay decision. So, there's a great bill in Congress, by Thomas Massey, who's an inventor from MIT, and, he understands this system, and it's gathering support. But it's got a long way to go in order to become law. So, it's called Restoring America's Leadership and Innovation Act.
Okay. And what are the things that would make the system fair? You said repealing the American Invents Act. Is it replacing it with anything, or just getting rid of it?
So the Restoring America's Leadership and Innovation Act, the Congressman Massey bill, would take us back about 15 years. It's okay. Not radical at all. It would repeal the American Invents Act that created this administrative patent PTAB, the Patent Revocation Board. It would get rid of that and go back to taking your case to a real court in front of a real jury. It would also undo the Supreme Court decision eBay that said, you know, you can't get an injunction to stop the people who stole your invention. So I'd say those two things, getting rid of, you know, administrative patent invalidations, restoring the right to injunctive relief to decide who gets to use your invention. And
why would that be important? Injunctive relief.
So this is that, a patent is supposed to be the right to exclude. So it's supposed to give you exclusive right to decide how your invention's used, what brand it carries, what color it is, what quality level it has, how much it's sold for. And the Supreme Court got rid of that. They said, no, we'll have centrally planned licensing, compulsory licensing of invention. So the judge will decide how much your invention's worth, who can use it, what's good for society. And so you got to put that back in. I mean, it's got to be like, it's my property. I decide how it's going to be used and how much they're going to pay for it. Otherwise, if you don't really own it and you don't know 10 years, 20 years from now what your rights are, then the investors aren't, I mean, you're not going to get investors. You're not going to take those risks. I get inventors come to me now with ideas like, will you fund me? I'm like, well, you have no collateral. Well, I have a U.S. patent. I can't do anything with that. I mean, no one respects it. So I can't give you a $500,000 investment seed funding to go develop this product because someone else is going to steal it. And the Supreme Court has said that that's okay. And Congress has said they're going to take back that patent. So the legislation that's out there that, has a chance to move forward next year would get rid of that problem and say, no, this is your... If you meet the requirements and come up with a new technology no one else ever thought of before, and you get a patent for it, the government's going to stand behind that patent, and other people can't trample it and steal it. It's really simple. No more stealing.
Yeah.
No more stealing things you don't own.
That's pretty simple. It's a good way to sum it up. Yeah. Okay, we're getting about to the end of the time. Is there anything that I did not ask you that you would want people to know about patents or your story or whatever else?
I guess I'd want them to understand what I'm trying to do and what we need to do as a country and as an entrepreneur or a voter or an activist. We have to be real about the situation. So we can't sugarcoat it. You can't pretend like, and put your head in the sand like I did and say, all these problems and fears, they don't apply to me because I'm going to get a good lawyer. I have a good invention. And so this is not a problem for me. We have to be realistic that this is the exception has become the rule now, where if you succeed, if you do your part, you obey the laws, you're going to lose. The big guys are going to steal it and the government's going to help them. So that's a really dark, depressing message. People don't like it. It's not inspiring. But I don't say that because I want to stay there. We got to get real that we have a serious problem here and then come help me fix it. We've got model legislation. We've got champions on the Hill. We have events. Join me. Let's fix it. Let's don't just sugarcoat and pretend that we don't have a problem here that doesn't affect you or your kids or your neighbors or your community or your country. So that's it. I want to just let's get real about the problem and then let's, join me and come up with a solution.
And if people want to join you, how do they do that? Where do they go?
usinventor.org.
usinventor.org. And there's a place for people to go, even if they're not an inventor, like if they're like me and they want to help you.
Absolutely.
Because you're not going to be able to, one thing you said is you're not unique. There are hundreds of thousands of people like you. That is great. If we've got 300 million people in the country, it is a teeny percentage of the people who are in the country, who are like you. So all of us who can help stand up for it and help you and other inventors like you, it's going to benefit our entire country. And who knows what we're going to be doing to benefit the world in the future by helping inventors today.
Absolutely.
Josh, thanks so much for joining us. And for everyone listening or watching, you can now view Innovation Race on salemnow.com. And if you want more information about the film, go to innovationracemovie.com. And to learn more about Josh Malone's story and to see our prequel, Invalidated, you can catch that on Apple TV and Amazon Prime Video.
The Innovation Race podcast is hosted by Jenny Beth Martin and produced by Kevin Mooneyhan, Lori Heiselman, and Andy Peterson. Luke Livingston directs the video podcast. Innovation Race podcast is a production of Tea Party Patriots Action. For more information, visit teapartypatriots.org. That's teapartypatriots.org.